Syrup or Talk of Podcast. If you don't know about it, now you know.
Hey, you got something to say?
One topic, two options.
We got a lot to say. Welcome to episode 103, Unwanted Emotions Triggered by Mental Illness. We are making live phone calls to our guests.
Wisdom for wellness continuation, in addition to conversations with Light Up the Darkness podcast and Mr. Rich Griffiths.
And do remember that there will be three additional episodes in regards to this topic. So we ask that you listen to them all.
Who are we speaking to, you might ask? Well, we had the chance to speak to licensed counselors, social workers, podcasters, religious leaders, motivational speakers, and individuals who were willing to share their journey with mental illness. We ask that you listen up and you listen closely. If you want to be a part of the next discussion in regards to mental health, please email us at shutuportalkup@gmail.com. We ask that you listen up and you listen closely.
Hey, you got something to say?
My parents were married for 40 years and my father just physical recently passed away, but he's present. And so my mom, she goes to work. You know, even processing my father, I have five sisters and one brother. So we kind of like all rotate, try to communicate with her, try to keep her active, doing certain things. But going to work has always been my mom's escape go, or just, you know, trying to provide. And you know, we look at her sometimes like, Mom, we know you had all six of us, but we're all out the house now. Everybody didn't graduate. Everybody, we good. You don't really have to do this, but we realize going to work for her is a therapeutic thing for her. I won't diagnose my mom. I'm not saying she have a mental illness, but I do know, you know, whether you have a mental illness or a diagnosed illness or not, you know, she escapes into working, going to work. So during COVID, we were like, nah, lady, you gotta sit home. we not losing you. She wants to go back to work because for her mental peace, she feel like being active is gonna help her. And so that's been challenging for me and my siblings and even my mom. She's still, you know, independent, but just us trying to intrude and say no. She's like, wait a minute, I done push all of y'all out. Y'all not gonna tell you what to do.
Mm-hmm. And it's a safe distraction for her.
Yeah.
Way.
Yeah, it seems like it's a safe distraction for her, but I guess, you know, we can't tell her what to do. So, you know, that's something that we're dealing with because we don't want her to have any, like a breakdown or anything, but just taking it one day at a time, you know, and trying not to intrude our method. My method is different from my mom's method or my sister's. And I realized that I can't force my method of self-care on someone else. And I was wrongfully doing that with my mom, like, try this, try that. And I was like, wait a minute. My method ain't gonna work for her. How dare I do that? Like, so.
Yeah, that's very wise of you. It took me some time to learn that too, that what's normal for her is not my normal, like what I think might be ideal. Now what I do is I kind of low-key suggest things to her that are on YouTube that I saw and thought were interesting.
Mm.
And then she might be curious about it, and I kind of just leave it.
Right.
So I may say, I saw this video, and they were talking about blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Let me show it to you. Yeah, send it to me. And so then I'll send it to her, and she'll watch it. And then sometimes we can talk around. So it's my way of being able to share a different perspective with her without me necessarily having to tell to her. It's kind of like we're both experiencing like this learning together.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So my mom is the exact same way. She is more busy retired than she was when she was working for.
Oh, wow.
And I know that is, again, like with your mom, mm-hmm. like part of her retreat, part of her escape. But there's a part of us that want to know, okay, are you enjoying this? Is this replenishing you? Mm-hmm. Or is this helping you to not
deal
with something?
Yes.
That I can't move for sure.
Yeah. That, that has been a topic amongst me and my siblings. And, you know, just even just the climate and just even understanding my family's mental health history. I've always been the kid that wanted to hear the family stories. I would ask my aunts and my aunt, I want to know who did this or who did that.
And in terms of exposing them to things, I brought my mother with me. Well, she met up with me for this conference in New Orleans that I was speaking at. It was a mental health conference. And so it gave me, again, an opportunity, like with sharing the videos, an opportunity for us to talk about something without me necessarily having to say it. So yeah. She saw other women get up and share stories about what it was like growing up and how they felt about themselves, but how they couldn't tell their mother, or how they felt oppressed by their mother, or how they never felt like they were good enough. Like all these different things that relate to our psyche. And so we were talking about these things, and this one lady, she was like, wow, wasn't that something about what she was saying about her and her mom? And I was like, Mama, you know, I felt like that lots of times.
Yeah.
She was blown away. And then I would bring up some things that happened, and she would remember them but not realize the real impact that her words had on me at the time. Growing up, or what it was like with her being divorced from my father and probably going through PTSD herself, you know, as a woman who had been so severely abused physically and emotionally, and then you take that and you're trying to raise a child.
Yeah.
Just imagine, you know what I mean? And so here I am, but...
And she didn't know. She just...
led to other conversations, and one of the things she said... And because I think for a while, you know, you go through this, like, how do you not know? Like, how did you not know that saying that?
As a child.
She had no idea. And she said, wow, killing, I just didn't know what I didn't know.
Wow.
And I had to release that for myself because I realized that there was a part of me that resented that she didn't see me. And when I say see me, I mean, like, you know,
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, and so I thought, wow.
Just to mention, forgiveness is so important to me. When I was younger, they would be like, oh, you know, you spicy, or, you know, you the spicy one, or whatever it was. And I realized that I had to implement forgiveness in my walk and my soul, because I was not always a forgiving person. And when I was a kid, I would be like, why would my father would say something to me like, oh, you're cute, but make sure that ain't all. Like, or he would say, yeah, you're pretty, but don't be pretty dunce. You know, he would always highlight that I'm beautiful, but always like kind of like let me know, calm down, make sure you're smarter than what you look like. And as a kid, it would bother me. I would feel like, why would my father say this to me? He's a mean person. And then even things my mom said. And when I got older, I realized, like, wait a minute. You know, my father even said to me, because me and my sisters, we come in all beautiful shades of being black. I'm the lighter one. And growing up for me, I felt like I didn't struggle much, but I always felt like I was dark. I wish I was darker because everybody else was darker. But my father would let me know. He would let us all know, his daughters know, that we're beautiful and this, that, we could do anything. But I felt like he would specifically let me know, don't think because you're brown, you're better than your sisters, or you're better than anyone. And I was so like 7, 8. And I would feel like, why would he say this to me? But you know what, as an adult, as a kid and as a teenager, I felt targeted. But as an adult, I understand why he was telling me, don't let that get to you. It's your heart.
You didn't get that until you were an adult.
Oh, I didn't get it until like a couple years ago. But like,
and that's what I had to tell my mama. I said, and she was like, well, I didn't mean it like that. Well, I just was saying something. I was like, Mama, when you are a child, anything an adult says, especially the closest adults to you, that's the gospel. If they're saying it, it must be real. Kids don't understand sarcasm. Kids don't get that Mm-hmm. You're just saying something. Mm-hmm. They believe that. So if you say over and over again, mm-hmm. girl, don't nobody want to be bothered with you, mm-hmm. then I believe nobody really wants to be bothered with
mm-hmm.
me. At some point, nobody wants me there. Mm-hmm. I'm not as valued. You told me that all the time. Now, you were just saying something in your mind,
mm-hmm.
but you're saying that to a child.
A child.
That's why it's so important that we change those things.
The conversation, like, the language.
Being very mindful with how you talk to kids. I'm an educator, and I see the effects of how children are being talked to, and I try as best as I can to kind of twist and turn some of this stuff around. And there are a whole bunch of parents who are getting that right. But for those that are still, you know, working on it, you send these kids off to school, then we're seeing how much of that thinking is in them. One of my concerns, speaking of that as an educator, has been about, when I think about some of the conversations I've had with some of my middle schoolers in particular, when they talk about how they feel about themselves, I think, wow, this boy is going to be in the house with his father talking to him like that for months now.
Mm-hmm.
Or this girl is going to be in this house, and it's going to be back and forth over and over again all day.
No escape to go to school to get away from it.
Yeah, because of school. So they don't have school as like an out. Now, that's a whole nother conversation.
That is a whole, yes, it is.
But the whole point being, like, you know, we have, especially now, such a tremendously special opportunity to pour into kids like never before. Because just because we did that, because, you know, some people are like, well, that's how my mama talked to me, or that's how my dad talked to me, and you can make
get it over it.
No, that don't mean that you know, cussing out 5-year-old because your mama told you to get your ass in the bed.
Right.
Like, no.
It's definitely the language and just understand that it's okay to change, you know. We were talking about, you made a comment early about toxic, strength, not toxic strength. I use the term toxic strength, but you, the idea of, you know, we carry these baggage on, or this Nobel Peace Prize of being strong, but we're strong for toxic reason. Then also to kind of come back to what we're talking about now, how people would be, you know, feel like they're carrying on a tradition by using the same language instead of breaking it. You know, I didn't even think about that until we're having this conversation. We're perpetuating, we're carrying on the same language because it was. And the other day I had a conversation with my mom, and I remember going up, and I, you know, everybody had different situations. My mom never really cursed. I probably heard my mother curse once in a while, but she's spicy. I've heard my mom and my dad argue. I'd be like, ooh, I hope daddy don't do nothing. I was scared, but he didn't do anything. And I was just like, some days my mom would say something. I'd be like, Lord, why would mommy say that to daddy? But anyway, I had to thank my mom, because I remember growing up and being around certain friends or certain situations, or not really family members, but I've seen where mothers would call their daughters the word, like, a bitch, or, you know, to me, anytime I would be around it and I hear it, I just cringe, because I would be like, I can't imagine a mother saying that to their daughter. And I realized, even going back to the forgiveness thing, is that I had to forgive my mother and my father for the things they didn't know. First of all, they were just two people trying to figure out themselves and figure out their 5 kids or their 6 kids. The mistakes they made is because they were living their life. And as an adult, I understand that now. And I understand that all the things I was upset about or holding grudge about, it's irrelevant. And that kind of relieved me for not having, like, a breakdown, letting go. That's one of my tips, I would say, letting go and understanding it's not your fault. Sometimes people, they work with what they have or what they were taught to do.
I don't know about your parents, but for mine in particular, a lot of them were younger than we were.
Yes.
I mean, younger than we are right now.
Mm-hmm.
When they had kids.
Yeah.
Like, so you think about it, at 21, 2, 3, 4, 5, did we have the emotional bandwidth to really be pouring into somebody?
Right.
You're trying to figure your own self out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of us, like I said earlier, when I think about my mom now, I was like, oh, wait a second. She was in her early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
She had been beaten in every sense of the word by my father. So now you're dealing with heartache. You're dealing with abuse. Now you think about the things that an abused woman goes through.
And then society pressures.
Right.
And then physical.
On top of that. So it's not just you. Mm-hmm. It's like you're trying to figure out your job situation, your living situation, and all of that.
You're trying to survive. Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't have those responsibilities at her age. So that's the other thing.
Me too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a valid point. We're going to wrap up the call. You shared a lot of great facts, but I would ask you, what would be one more thing that you can share for Black men when it comes to mental illness?
I would have to preface this by saying I know that there's no way I can ever know what it must be like to be a Black man, period, and then being a Black man in the United, and that's an air quote, States of America. But I would say for those of us who love and admire and respect Black men, to provide a safe space for them where they can be vulnerable, because I can imagine it takes bravery and courage, trust, for them to even extend the trust to be able to say how they feel. So I would say let's encourage them, like, with our words more, like saying more things like, I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
Like how you said that, wow, you have great ideas. You know, it really matters to me what you think about blah, blah, or I like how you did that.
Mm.
Whatever those things are, so that we are building them up for, you know, from within. And then hopefully there will be one or more than one that they feel like, when it's time for them to let go, that they can do that. Mm-hmm. And they can do that safely and not feel judged. And not, feel anything less than kingly when they want to share how they truly feel.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that insight. You've definitely been very insightful. And shout out to all the Black men out there. We love you. and not only, you know, the state of America, you know, not even just America, the world. And there's so many other suicide situations. And this is the reason for conversations like this. This is not like the first conversation people will hear, but this is just adding to the pot. I think everyone playing their part to shed awareness and to give information. I'm sure when people hear this podcast and hear your insight, they'll be walking away with something. And that's what we want to do. And that was the purpose of having this conversation. And we want to thank you so much. Can you please let the people know where they can find you on your platform?
Yes, you can go to Wisdom for Wellbeings, and it's the number 4, WISDOM 4, the number 4, Wellbeings with an S.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. And we appreciate your time. And thank you for joining the Shut Up or Talk Up podcast. And yeah, have a wonderful day, and keep the positive vibes going, because we really appreciate you.
Thank you. I appreciate you. Thanks for having me.
All right. No problem.
Hello?
Hi, is this Erin from the Light Up the Darkness podcast?
Yep, this is Erin.
Hi. Hi, this is from the Shut Up or Talk Up podcast. First, we just want to say thank you for joining in on our conversation about mental health.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on mental health in America today?
The main thought which drove me to create this podcast and this platform is that a lot of people, particularly poor and marginalized communities, don't have proper access to mental health care. And it's been an issue for a long time. And And beyond the access issue, there is, like, inside the community, particularly the Black community, kind of like a silent or mum is the word kind of code when it comes to talking about mental health amongst each other. Even if we recognize there's an issue, it's just not spoken about, and therefore people don't get or seek treatment.
Yes.
I created the podcast because I wanted to kind of add to the conversation and to kind of show people that it's okay to not be okay.
Right.
And that I think inherently as humans, we have to know or we notice when something is off with ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. Like internally, or if we're a loved one of ours, is, you know, like something's a little off with that. With my sister, she's like sleeping all the time, or she hasn't held a job. Like, you know, something, like, the knowledge is there that something's wrong. You may not know a specific diagnosis, but you kind of just say, oh, if she wants to get up. Like, there's this thing where it's like, not even just in the Black community, just in America, I would say, we look at mental health challenges as something that people should just get up and change on their own.
Right.
And it's not always that easy. So the education is not, is definitely not there, because, I mean, you have to actually seek that out if you want to. But I think people know, like, when something is wrong.
Right.
You know that, you feel it, you see it. It's just the action, the next step of, like, what is wrong,
right,
and how can we help? I think as Black people, as we know, like, we deal with this, like, projection on us, like, the strong Black woman, the man has, like, these masculinity standards that they have to meet of being the provider, taking care of the household, not crying, like you said, mm-hmm. or showing these signs of quote-unquote weakness by doing these kind of things, or showing any kind of emotion. And we just aren't given the space as Black people to just be vulnerable, or to, you know, to be whole.
Like, to go even, into those, like, yeah.
We all have these parts of ourselves that are not necessarily within that stereotype of the strong Black man or woman. Really not knowing about, you know, not having access, like I just talked about, going back to that. There's all of that together just combines to this kind of, like,
explosive. It can be explosive.
Yeah,
because of, like, a domino effect of so many things piled on, no outlet. You have this image or this standard that you have to meet, these outside world pressures. So that someone with a mental illness that hasn't been properly diagnosed, or even someone that, even if you don't have a mental illness, some days you're happy, some days you're not, you know, even finding skills to get out of that, you know, especially in this time of the pandemic, and where life is changing, even for kids that has to stay home. Do you think that America view mental illness different when it comes to white Americans versus Black Americans?
I don't know what America's view is, but I think within our separate communities, there's a different approach to it. Like, I know for myself growing up, I'm like, I guess I'm considered like an older millennial. I heard often or sometimes, you know, therapy is for white people, or
I've heard that years ago.
And I think, you know, if someone my age who's white growing up in their family may have had more exposure to, again, this goes back to the same conversation about speaking about it, the silence thing, and also access. So, like, a person in a white household will know that therapy is okay. We seek therapy when we are feeling depressed.
Right.
We can talk about the fact that we see a therapist, and there's no shame and there's no stigma there, or less of a stigma. And so I think that that's like a major
difference. So that's the difference.
It is changing. It's definitely changing, especially due to COVID and the pandemic. Like, a think more people are finding it less uncomfortable to speak about their mental health. There are lots of communities that are building up to support Black people who need, you know, maybe alternative options to traditional therapy. So people are doing like Reiki energy healing, or, you know, aromatherapy, sound bath, meditation, yoga, things that are a little more accessible if you, for example, don't have insurance or can't afford to see a traditional therapist at this time. Like, there's other
things that they can do. Do you meet a lot of Black people that their entire family is focused on therapy, or is it just a new thing now?
Personally, no. I don't know a lot of Black people who even talk about going to therapy. Throughout my lifetime, no. No, I can't, like, not at all. Even my friends who, like you said, are Caribbean or from, you know, have African roots. It's just as much of a stigma in those communities, like you said,
as well.
I think that's like the African diaspora thing. Like, we all have a similar traumatic history, like, you know,
mm-hmm.
the slave trade. Something that I say, like, surviving was what we had to do for so long, that now that we've survived a lot, we now need to know how to live,
to unpack, you know? and live. Yeah. Do you think that trust is an issue within our community? Why people don't want to go to a therapist? Why would I go to, you know, some people say, why would I go to a therapist? That's just me telling somebody my business. Or I don't want to go speak to a white man about my Black problems.
Yeah, well, I'm one of those people.
So tell me why, and elaborate.
Well, here's the thing, like, overall, access to mental health therapists or clinicians or whatever, licensed and professionals, there's like a shortage nationwide, like in general, like we need more, especially now mm-hmm. with what's going on. Many, many people are struggling, and these people are overworked and all that kind of stuff. But then you get like in the Black community, and people are looking for a therapist who looks like them. Just like you, I mean, this is the person you're going to open up to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you are opening up to them. You are sharing like your deepest self that you probably, that's the only way you're going to heal, right? Is if you get that deep and you share it with this person that you would maybe not share with anybody else.
So you can have a certain,
and it feels more comfortable if that person is a part of your community. And then when you get into the Black community, like a Black therapist is specific to me, not a therapist of color, like a Black therapist, because there are so many things that we deal with as Black Americans specifically, or Black people in the mm-hmm. world, that we don't want to talk about in therapy, but those things are part of what we're coming to therapy with, that contribute to things that, you know, some of the things we are dealing with on a daily basis. But we don't want to talk about those microaggressions we deal with in our corporate jobs, or like, you know, the racism that we just dealt with when we were pulled over by the cops, or like things that they know already that we don't have to talk about in therapy.
Oh, okay.
And there may not be a lot of Black therapists, but there are a lot of directories out there that are coming out where you can find one, and I encourage people to look for those.
Right, definitely. I don't know if it's a culture thing to instantly attack someone that's like, that needs help, or someone that we would have thought would have been living fine, or they have money. Why could this be happening? You know, they need to get over it. They got all that money. Or if I had all that money, I wouldn't be doing this. Okay, yeah. Just because someone has all this money, you know, that don't mean they can't be suffering internally, you know. Mental illness has no discrimination, no matter how big your pockets are.
If we continue to share our stories, there are other celebrities who, like Amanda Seale, shared that she had a nervous breakdown recently, and people were receptive to her sharing that story and being vulnerable and talking. talking about how she was able to manage it and get through it. But, you know, that I think that helps.
Shout out to Amanda Seals.
Yes,
we definitely support her as well. And even understanding that if you have to step away from something just to save yourself.
And I really respect people who are able to do that. Maybe they have the right support system around them to allow them to and help them do that. For example, like, what's that rapper's name? God, I'm losing my mind.
Kid Cudi or something like that?
Yeah, Kid Cudi, my bad. Yes, Kid Cudi, who, he shared that he suffered from mental health issues a few years ago, maybe like 4 years ago or so, and he made like a long social media post about it, and he was like, I'm going to handle my mental health, but I, you know, and he was just open about it as a Black man. I respected that tremendously, because like we said, there's the stigma, and as a celebrity, you know, and he went and did what he had to do to take care of himself, and he wasn't out there in the world, like, doing too much, doing the most, you know. He just kind of went inward and focused on himself, and I think I saw a post from him recently, since, you know, everything that's been going on with racism in this country.
Everything that's been going on with that thing called, oh, yeah, the big R, racism. But you know what? The fight towards it is moving along, but that is another topic, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. But he posted recently about how that, you know, that has triggered him, and he had to take a break from everything, and he's like healing, because I know that triggered a lot of us.
Even a non-Black person, I would, you know, I know I focus on our culture a lot, but even a non-Black person just witnessing all the trauma, you know, any person can be, a lot of this is traumatic. You're for justice, really, and you're for equality, and you're for all these, that it's also weighing heavy on your heart and your soul as well, too. I believe in your conscience and your mental health as well too, especially if you're an American or a white American that believes in true justice and equality, but you're from a family that don't. But I was raised in a family that is 100% against that. So now you're in a place where you're torn. You're torn between doing something right consciously, and you're torn between the fact that your family is on the wrong side of history. And that also can cause a mental breakdown for individuals that's dealing with that. Mental health is so important, especially even with children. I don't know if you have any children at all, but...
Yeah, I do, actually.
Okay, great. Well, like, what are some therapeutic things, and not even just therapeutic things, but things that parents can do with their kids during this time, and also implement it even after the pandemic, just to kind of help their child's mental health?
Yeah. I actually have an episode that's coming out about that very soon, but yes. I have a 6-year-old, and I think it just boils down to listening to your children or your child and giving them space to express themselves and to feel whatever feelings they feel, and don't try to like stifle that. But you have to create that like foundation.
A foundation of that, like freedom.
Yeah, and love your children.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for participating in this conversation. We really appreciate you participating in the Shut Up or Talk Up podcast. You gave us great information. We want our listeners and our viewers to check out your podcast, your platform, and your next episode, as you mentioned earlier. So if you could just let everyone know where they can find your podcast and what platforms you're on. And
yeah. Thank you for having me. This was a great conversation. My podcast is called Light Up the Darkness, and you can find it on both platforms. It is available on Apple Podcasts, and Facebook.
All right. So that's where you guys can find her and her platform to get more information. Follow her, subscribe, hit like, share her content. Definitely support. And we want to say thank you for joining us again. And, you know, we appreciate you participating in this mental health conversation. It was so needed.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. Thanks for having these conversations. Like you said, they're so important. Yes. I appreciate it.
No problem. Well, thank you again. And have a great day, okay?
You too.
Bye. All right, bye.
Hello?
Hi, is this Rich Griffiths? I hope I'm pronouncing your name right.
Oh, that's perfect. That's correct.
Okay. All right. So this is from the Shut Up or Talk Up podcast. We just want to thank you for joining the platform, shedding some insight on mental health, mental illness. We wanted to start off by give the people a chance to be aware of your platform and what your platform stands for.
Absolutely. Yes. So my name is Rich Griffiths. I'm currently actually a student in grad school at North Carolina State University, studying to become a licensed clinical mental health counselor.
Awesome.
I'm going into my second year of college, and essentially, I want to be a voice for the people, specifically for Black men. Like, that was part of the reason that I decided to go back to school. My original degree is in graphic design. It's my undergrad. So I graduated from undergrad over 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, finally made a decision to go back to school for something that's totally different, simply because I wanted to learn more so that I'm able to help people.
Right.
Again, like, I want to help everybody, but my specific target really is Black men, because I know that for our community, a lot of times mental health, there's a stigma behind it.
Yeah.
So just trying to combat that stigma and just make it more normalized to talk to a counselor. So that's kind of...
Well, that's awesome. My first question to you would be, what are your thoughts about mental health in America today?
I will say that I do feel like it is starting to, the conversations are beginning to happen around it. Like, I do feel like with, you know, some celebrities speaking out and just certain celebrities that are actually dealing with their own mental health issues, it's starting to become more of a topic starter. Like, people are starting to talk about it a little bit more. I do feel like there still is a stigma around it, but again, I do recognize that
the effort
is becoming more of something that people are willing to have a conversation about.
Mm-hmm. As a Black man in America, when were you introduced to mental health?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And sadly enough, I feel like I really wasn't introduced to it until maybe about two and a half years ago. And that's really when I had my first counselor, and I'm 31 years old, and I had my first counselor around the age of, like, 29.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess it's one of those things where, you know, you hear people talk about it, but, again, it wasn't something that I, you know, was well-versed in or, you know, really even knew much about. I think it kind of took me... having my own counselor before, it was something that I became a little bit more interested in, which again, I feel like it's kind of sad, but I feel like there are a lot of people like me out there who may have heard of it, you know, social media or again, like the certain celebrities, but it wasn't something that I was really that familiar with.
Right. So
I think people still are very ignorant to mental health just in general. And I think as far as like with Black people, again, we do chalk it up to someone being crazy or someone being possessed by a demon or, you know, for those who are spiritual. And I think we always kind of associate a white people with the ones that have, like, the mental health issues. So, again, you know, when you do have someone shoot up a school or shoot up a movie theater or what have you.
Yeah.
You know, it's always talked up to.
Like, Black people don't do that. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
You're right.
And so I think for our community, again, it's because it's one of those topics that we don't really address. And, you know, to your point, you know, like people in our family, whether it's our parents or grandparents, again, they talk it up to someone being crazy instead of really, a lot of times, it's, you know, someone really dealing with a serious mental health issue, whether it's like bipolar or someone just dealing with depression or anxiety. Like, you know, it's always, oh, yeah, that person, they're just a little crazy, or you know how they are.
Right.
When it really could be a serious issue.
Right. Honestly. Do you think that not knowing about mental health affected any of your relationships? You know, do you think that you being a Black man, not being aware of your mental health or what mental health is or triggers or things like that, did that ever affect any of your past relationships or recent or current relationships?
Yeah, I do feel like it's affected relationships, specifically romantic ones. Just kind of looking back at some of the relationships I have been in and, you know, just looking at maybe some of my behaviors or even some of the behaviors of the individuals I was with.
Right.
I think if I was a little bit more, I'm not even going to say versed in mental health, but just, you know, more aware of it, period, that it would have helped me navigate some of those relationships a little better, or even just perspective, maybe gotten help that I needed at the time.
So right.
I could have been a better, you know, boyfriend or whatnot to the person I was with.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of looking at some of my past relationships, some of the people that I was with, they were dealing with their own mental health issues, you know, childhood traumas or a little bit of depression.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can specifically call out some instances with people that, you know, looking back now, I'm like, okay, yeah, that clearly was a sign that they were dealing with something that was a little bit deeper than I probably could have kept them with. So I think, you know, again, if it was something that I was just a little bit more aware of, you know, it would explain certain things a little bit better. But again, when you don't know, you just don't know.
Right.
And again, just being... waiting until I'm like 29 years old to even see a counselor for the first time, I think, is an issue.
Well, the thing is,
it's never too late.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's never too late. That's not an issue, you know, because 30, you know, 29, you know, you still got your whole life ahead of you. Don't look at it as that. You at least you got there. What I wanted to mention was that I never really hear guys talk about women and their own mental issues or depression or anxiety. I always hear that because I am a Black woman and I'm around Black women.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really hear Black men vent about Black women about, you know, when it comes to mental health. I normally hear Black women throw the shots. I'm just going to put it out there, sisters. I know y'all not going to like it, but... it's a Shut Up or Talk Up podcast. Respond. I'm just being honest. And I think when it comes to mental health and relationships and things like that, I don't hear a lot of females saying, you know what? Okay, he probably was this, that, and the third, but, you know, I could be a little annoying, or I got this issue, or I get anxiety, and, you know, I could have triggered this on him. But I always hear women talk about how, you know, men are full of shit, just to sum it up. Just to sum it up. What I wanted to ask you was, what are your thoughts on implementing self-care to children?
That's a good question. So I actually have a 1-year-old and I have a 9-year-old. For instance, taking them outside, because I know, you know, with the whole quarantine thing going on, most of us, including our children,
mm-hmm.
are stuck inside, and so that in itself can be triggering for some people, because, you know, you can go out, whatever you can do, most places you gotta wear a mask, and you gotta keep certain distance from other people, and it's very limiting. So, when it comes to self-care for children, I think, you know, finding things that they like to do. So if it's like riding their bike,
right,
going for a walk outside, just keeping them active. And even if it's not going outside, you know, maybe it's watching a movie or, you know, playing some game. games, but I know most kids these days are so into electronics that, you know, the board game is, so just getting them away from those devices, because I think that in itself can be overwhelming, because it, even for me, it's overwhelming just being on a computer all day and then
right.
on my phone and all of that. So I think, getting them away from the electronic devices, finding things that they like to do, even if it's like taking them in the kitchen with you and, you know, making a meal together,
right.
just something that can help them kind of take their mind off certain things and to be able to just kind of chill out and relax a bit while also, you know, having a little bit of fun because they're kids at the end of the day. So,
right.
You know, they want to enjoy what they're doing and not have it set up a task. Just like self-care is important for adults, it's just as important for children, especially right now with this whole pandemic situation.
Yeah. In regards to other Black men, your friends, your male friends, your male cousins, do you think that Black men are ashamed of admitting that they have a mental illness? That was a whole lot. That was a whole lot. I know that was a whole lot because, like, boom, boom, boom. But, and I'm going to elaborate a little bit more. But then the world does also put the most weight on y'all. And even with that, you know, there's this image of boys don't cry. So I could imagine in my mind, you know, how some guys may think, you know, I don't even want to find out, you know, because it's probably going to be a shameful thing. So that's why I asked you.
Yeah, that is a very touchy comment or thing for some people, and the irony is that I was literally just having this conversation yesterday online, like someone had posted something in the group I'm in. And so honestly, I do feel like that a lot of men, specifically Black men, are ashamed to admit that they may be dealing with something, or if they do actually know that they're dealing with something, to even admit or, you know, publicly openly talk about it. And I think it is because, again, like you mentioned, like with Black men, we are seen as these individuals that are strong. You know, we don't deal with nothing, we don't cry, we don't show any form of weakness. And, you know, to admit that you are struggling with a mental illness is essentially, for some, seen as a sign of weakness. But I feel like, you know, if you're able to admit that and you can own it, that's a sign of strength, because again, you know, the stigma that society puts on certain things like mental illness, I think for someone to be able to talk about it is showing a sign of strength. And then too, I think that admitting that you may be struggling with some form of mental illness or just mental health problems makes them feel like they're less than. I guess that kind of ties into, you know, feeling weak. And to kind of touch on what you mentioned with the whole emotion thing, Black men in general, we struggle with being vulnerable, showing our emotions. And so all of that kind of just ties in together, to be honest. And I'm blessed to have a group of friends, Black men specifically, that they get it. So, you know, we'll have conversations about things like this, and there's no shame in it. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if Black men had more
friends or this circle
that were willing to be transparent and just willing to be vulnerable about things like this, then that too would help them feel a little bit more comfortable.
Right.
And then to kind of just touch on, add this last little point, like right now we're seeing this whole thing with Kanye West, right?
Yeah.
And so I think things like that can kind of hurt this whole conversation simply because they don't want to be labeled crazy.
Right. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. I wouldn't consider him crazy. I think he's just dealing with a sickness. And I think, you know, when you change the way that you look at it, and you look at it as though, okay, you're not crazy, you're just dealing with a problem right now.
Right.
Then that, too, could hopefully kind of help black men specifically be a little bit more comfortable or okay with admitting that, hey, I might be dealing with something. Let me go get professional help.
Right.
I can work through this thing, you know?
And then I think going back to the Kanye situation, I think hopefully that encouraged people, you know, in general, and also black men, to seek help before they get to that point. So all my brothers out there, the kings out there, if you know your family history, if you know about your father or your mom, or if you don't know and you're struggling with emotions and you're not too sure, I just want to put a disclaimer out there. I am not a therapist. I am not a psychiatrist. You know, that's not my profession. But I do encourage you to just, you know, reach out for help. If you're on social media, you want to make sure who you're following is feeding you positive things. You know, you want to make sure you're following based. You know, you're following some hot stuff, that's cool. You know, music, that's cool. But you want to low-key slip in a mental health person in there, you know. You know, you want to slip in certain things from certain people that will inspire you. Every time this person posts something uplifting, you're seeing it, and it's triggering something, and it's motivating you. Whether if you have a problem with communicating with your friends, or you feel like your friends are gonna clown you, or whatever it is, which I kind of feel like at a certain age, if your friends are clowning you for wanting to be a better man, then your friends are clowned. But
right.
So yeah, that part. So. Find you can search. You know, I literally search black men mental health. And I'm on the phone with this gentleman right now, and he's sharing his experience and he's giving us insight. And that's how it happened, literally. So that it's a possibility for you to still seek help in so many different ways. One of the things I wanted to talk about with the Kanye West situation, I've seen a lot of comments and you know, responses and people blaming Kim Kardashian for Kanye West's mental health. Do you think that a woman, any woman, black woman, white woman, Asian woman, do you think a man's mate, you know, lover, woman, wife, girlfriend, do you think that they are supposed to be held accountable or responsible for that man mental health? That was a lot too, but I like to get into the deep questions.
I think it's good. No, I don't think that they should be held accountable for that individual's mental health. At the end of the day, you know, Kanye West and anybody that's dealing with a mental illness, like, it's not Kim Kardashian's fault that Kanye West, you know, goes on these rants and, you know, it kind of spirals out of control. What I do commend her for, and I don't feel like she gets enough credit for this, is the fact that she is sticking by him, and we don't know what goes on behind closed doors.
Yeah, I think
she actually released a statement today on social media.
She's never said anything. I'm not even a Kardashian fan, but I just felt like she never said anything. So when she finally says something, people need to kind of like fall back. You don't know what this lady's going through.
Exactly.
You don't know.
Exactly. That was kind of my sentiment as well. So I did have a chance to kind of read some of what she had posted. And so, you know, it kind of goes back to what I was saying with, you know, we don't know what goes on behind closed doors and things she has to deal with with him. And, you know,
she got the four babies.
So, exactly.
Oh.
So, you know, I do commend her for sticking by his side, you know, really trying to stay true to the wedding vows and the covenant that they made to each other, because, you know, it says in sickness and health, and right now he's dealing with sickness.
Exactly.
And so, you know, I wouldn't want her to just walk out on him. Like, I think, you know, it probably is a lot to deal with, but again, I kind of commend her and anybody that's married to somebody who's dealing with any form of mental illness. You know, I commend them for having the strength to kind of stick by that person and help them, even when they are at their lowest. So, yeah, no, I don't blame her. It's not her fault. I mean, she's an adult. Who's just dealing with something.
There was another situation that was with, I think, Tamar. with the suicidal situation. And she's not like the only person that happened to. And our prayers definitely go out to her. But I was talking to someone the other day, and when you think about musicians, when you think about like Jimi Hendrix, and you think about a lot of young musicians that either pass away at a young age, or you think about a lot of comedians that have that dealing with mental illness. You know, some of our great gifts to the world, artists, they have dealt with mental illness, and some of them are still dealing with mental illness. And, you know, sometimes that mental situation is what ignites their creativity, you know?
Yep.
So it's like people say a gift and a curse.
So some things that I would, you know, give to anyone, for one, take time to, you know, practice self-care, right? So, you know, find things that you like to do, get out of the house, for sure, you know, get some sunlight. I know that people don't really realize how important it is to actually be outside in the fresh air. It's been hot, I know, here where I'm at, but even so, you know, maybe just sitting on the porch, going for a walk around the neighborhood, just taking some time for you is very important. Another thing that I've done, I don't do it as much now, but like journaling, like people don't realize how helpful journaling can be. Even just somebody who may not like to write a lot, just, you know, having the ability to kind of put your thoughts down on paper, or if you take notes on your phone. It's just a nice way to kind of, again, empty out your mind. And spending time with friends, that's kind of hard right now. But maybe even doing, like, Zoom, you know, meetups with your friends. I know we did that with one of my friends for their birthday. Like, we all got together on Zoom. One of us had some music playing in the background.
Okay.
Birthday it was. Like, she had her little lights in the background. So just things like that, because we know it's difficult to meet up with a lot of the restrictions. Like exercise, I guess it kind of goes to getting out of the house.
Yeah.
Walking around a bit, kind of moving, doing a little bit of jumping jacks and push-ups, something to kind of get the blood flowing. And I guess last but not least, and these are just a few tips because there's so much, but making sure you're being cognizant of what you're eating. Like, we don't realize how important our diets can be. And I'm not the, you know, I don't eat everything that I'm supposed to eat, but I do recognize that certain things, like a lot of sugar, a lot of fat, can be detrimental to your mind. So just being aware of
those
are a few things. And just kind of guarding your eye gate, your ear gate, what you're listening to, what you're watching, especially with the crazy news and all the stuff that we see going on daily. Just, you know, taking some time to, you know, unplug every now and then, even from social media, from TV, just, you know, getting away from that stuff, because that in itself can be mentally draining. I know for me, I have to take, you know, sabbaticals away from social media every now and then just to kind of recharge a bit. So, yeah, those are a few things that I would, you know, tell anyone who's looking for ways to kind of recharge and to be a little bit more aware of their mental health.
Okay, well, thank you so much. We definitely appreciate you participating into this conversation. You share great, you know, information. And now for the listeners, for the people that's going to be listening to this podcast, hearing you, can you tell them if they wanted to kind of tune into you or, you know, and get to your platform, what is your Instagram information?
Absolutely. My Instagram is king_rich.g. That's King, K-I-N-G, underscore, Rich, R-I-C-H, .G. And that's on Instagram. And if you want to follow me on Facebook, my page is Rich Griffiths, which is my first and last name. Griffiths, that's G-R-I-F-F-I-S.
So I just want to thank you so much for joining the Shut Up or Talk Up podcast. This was very important, and we're just so honored to have you to want to join and participate. We really appreciate it. Thank you again.
No, thank you for having me. I definitely enjoyed it.
All right, then. Thank you.
Freeze. I know. Just when the conversation was getting even better,
To hear the continuation of this conversation, please tune into episode 104 right now so you can get the rest of this conversation and more.